This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, two-spirit, queer, and questioning youth have well-documented health inequities. This is mostly attributable to societal stigma and marginalization, and it's related to risks of rejection and violence, as well as lower social support. A research report released in 2007 by the McCreary Center found that lesbian, gay, and bisexual teens in British Columbia experience greater levels of violence and more health challenges than heterosexual teens. McCreary's research director, Elizabeth Sawick, a professor at University of British Columbia School of Nursing, said the findings that most lesbian, gay, and bisexual teens are doing well, but far too many experience stigma and discrimination. However, when there are positive assets in these teens' lives, they do well, despite risks. Elizabeth Sawick is also the lead researcher for a current study that is looking at the effectiveness of school and community programs in reducing homophobic bullying of LGBTQ and straight youth who are labeled as being gay.
I spoke with Elizabeth Sawick earlier this week about the research she conducted in 2007 for McCreary Center and the much larger research project that is currently underway. You were involved in a 2007 research report called Not Yet Equal, The Health of Lesbian, Gay, and Bisexual Youth in BC. What did you find?
Well, that was actually a study looking at our BC Adolescent Health Survey that's run by McCreary Center Society, where I'm also a research director in addition to being a professor at UBC. And we actually looked at data from 1992, 1998, and 2003 of young people from across the province who are in school in grades 7 to 12. And that study looked at a variety of the health and risk behaviors and sort of the positive assets in young people's lives and compared lesbian, gay, and bisexual teens to their heterosexual counterparts to see how are things similar or different from them. And we identified a number of areas where gay, lesbian, and bisexual young people have greater health risks and fewer supportive resources in their lives compared to heterosexual teens. And that included higher rates of suicidal thoughts and attempts, higher rates of being more likely to drink alcohol and use other substances, much more likely to experience bullying and harassment and exclusion in school and physical and sexual abuse outside of school, a variety of, they're even more likely to smoke, less likely to be involved in exercise and sports involvement and other kinds of extracurricular activities, and more likely to report that they don't have people in their lives who care about them. So they were less connected to their families, less connected to school. And we also found that the lesbian, gay, bisexual teens in rural areas had slightly different patterns. They were just as likely to experience bullying and harassment as the young people in the urban centers, but there were some slight differences. There was slightly higher rates of suicidality and teen pregnancy involvement. That's one of the findings that's been fairly consistent across the research of those years, that gay, lesbian, and bisexual teens, both boys and girls, are more likely to be involved in pregnancy than heterosexual boys and girls. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but that, like suicide and some of the other health issues, seem to be linked to higher rates of stigma and discrimination, bullying, and other kinds of violence in their lives.
That research makes the link between what you described as, I've read this online, risk exposure, lack of support, and health issues. Those three areas. Tell me more about the link between those three.
Generally, what we see with a lot of young people is that some of the risky behaviors they engage in, like substance use or some of the sort of coping responses, like even, you know, thinking about suicide or attempting suicide, are actually because of risk exposures, things like violence or harassment or discrimination, being targeted for assault and abuse. So part of the stressors of living with discrimination and stigma contribute to distress, and that in turn, they look for ways to cope with that. Or if they just can't think of ways to cope, may actually become suicidal. But what we also find is that, generally speaking, even, you know, among young people who have some of the most challenging risk exposures, really toxic lives, you know, maybe even kicked out of their house and being homeless and things like that, not all of them end up with the challenging health outcomes. Not all of them end up being suicidal. Not all of them end up with, you know, substance abuse problems. So trying to understand what buffers that, you know, what helps reduce the chance of those negative outcomes, even when you've experienced those, you know, distressing and challenging life circumstances, is one of the things that we've looked at in our research. These are things that we call protective factors. And there's a variety of youth assets that help young people grow and be healthy generally. And, you know, those are the importance of relationships within family, within schools, within your community, the ability to feel safe where you are, the opportunity to engage in positive activities and be involved in things that can make you proud of yourself, like being involved in sports or the arts and performances or groups of other kinds. And so these kinds of positive relationships and positive engagements that allow you to develop a really great self-esteem also help buffer the stress that can come with feeling exposed to discrimination or dealing with the aftermath of violence and trauma. And so what we have found is that for gay, lesbian, and bisexual teens, they're less likely to have some of these protective factors in their lives. Their family may be less accepting. The school may be less safe. They may feel less cared about by teachers. But when they are, when they do have caring teachers and supportive families and have an opportunity to be involved in extracurricular activities, whether that's sports or arts or groups of different sorts, you know, Girl Guides or you know, supportive church groups, when they have those opportunities, even when they've been exposed to bullying, they're less likely to be suicidal or less likely to have problem substance use. So it is sort of that combination of having those protective factors in your lives as well to help buffer some of those risks and stressors. And that leads to different outcomes when it comes to health.
You're currently the principal researcher in a large multi-year, multi-site study. It's called Reducing Stigma, Promoting Resilience, Population Health Interventions for LGBTQ Youth. Tell me about that study.
So building on the Not Yet Equal research and the variety of research that we've been looking at, the sort of health differences for LGB youth, part of what's come up again and again is that the environments where they live and study and play are, you know, the really big important influences on how well they grow and develop as a teenager. And so part of what we're interested in doing is understanding those contexts and what can be changed in those environments to help create better outcomes for LGBTQ young people. And not just lesbian, gay, bisexual, but also transgender young people and questioning young people are part of this larger study. So it includes collaborators from across most of the provinces, from different universities like the University of Alberta in Edmonton and Wilfrid Laurier in Ontario and the University of Quebec at Montreal in Quebec and even Dalhousie in Halifax. So we've got people from all across Canada as well as some places in the United States. And we're looking at a variety of ways, both understanding the trends of what's happening. So is it getting better or worse for teenagers who are lesbian, gay, or bisexual, or transgender? And then also, are there different interventions that are put in place in schools, in communities, that make a difference? And can we evaluate how those are making a difference in the lives of these young people? So some recent research, for example, that we've done is we've actually looked at whether or not bullying and harassment in school has changed over the years, because we've got the research in BC going back to 1992, and we also have, you know, the more recent in 2008. And what we found is that although bullying is going down a little bit generally for heterosexual teens, it hasn't actually dropped for lesbian, gay, bisexual teens. And what we are thinking is that to some extent that is because a lot of the anti-bullying interventions that have been set up out there aren't necessarily designed to deal specifically with homophobia or discrimination because of sexual orientation. On the other hand, one of the other things we've done is actually look at a couple of those school-based interventions. There are, I believe, 15 or 16 school districts across BC that have put in place specific anti-homophobia policies. I know Vancouver School District is one, Victoria School District is another. You know, there are a variety of them across the province. And there are also schools all over, even in school districts that don't have the anti-homophobic bullying kinds of policies, there are schools that have gay-straight alliances. These are support groups or social justice groups for young people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, and their heterosexual peers to come together and talk about social justice and ways to reduce discrimination and harassment and homophobia in their community groups, and especially within their schools, and to provide support to create a safer and friendlier space within their school. So we've had a chance to actually analyze the data in BC from 2008, looking at those school districts that have had policies compared to those who don't, and those schools that have had gay-straight alliances compared to those that don't. And one of the things we've discovered is that if a school has had a policy or a gay-straight alliance in place for at least 3 years, it changes the environment in the school. And the lesbian, gay, and bisexual teens who are in that school report lower rates of discrimination because of being gay or being perceived to be gay, and lower rates of suicidal ideation and suicide attempts, and lower rates of problem substance use. Now, we've also found that, you know, so for those first couple years, school districts that have put something in place and it's just brand new, it doesn't make a difference yet. It takes a while for that to change for the whole school. Those kinds of things, we've seen changes for the kids who are actually part of the gay-straight alliance, but not necessarily for the whole school. And not all LGB kids are actually part of a GSA. One of the other important things that we've discovered, though, is also that heterosexual kids who are in the schools that have had anti-bullying policies or gay-straight alliances for at least 3 years, the heterosexual boys also report lower discrimination on the basis of being perceived to be gay, because we know that a lot of times sexual harassment and teasing and bullying, even for straight kids, is based around accusations of being gay. And they report less discrimination because people think they're gay, and they also report lower suicidality. So this is an intervention that's designed primarily to create safer space for lesbian, gay, and bisexual teens, but it also has an impact for heterosexual boys who are more often targeted for anti-gay bullying themselves. So it has some positive mental health outcomes for everybody, and this is a suggested intervention then that people might want to think about taking up in their schools.
There are two phrases in the title of this particular study that you've been talking about. One is reducing stigma. The other is promoting resilience. Can you tell me more about the concept of resilience and what it means and what it looks like?
There's a lot of different ways that people think about resilience. And sometimes people think about it as sort of an innate quality in somebody. You either have it or you don't. We actually think about resilience more from the perspective of the ability to bounce back from adversity, to do well in spite of difficult circumstances, as a process. It's the things in your environment, the opportunities and relationships that you have that help you to grow and thrive and help you cope despite experiencing those adversities or those challenges. So in this case, it would be the kinds of supports and environments and relationships that help you be strong in spite of stigma. So even though at a sort of community level, there's still a lot of discrimination and a lot of negative attitudes about lesbian, gay, and bisexual people, there's still a lot of young people who are being targeted for harassment and violence because of being gay, lesbian, or bisexual, or being perceived to be gay. When they have these other supportive resources in their lives, so when they've got caring adults in their family or outside their family who are also sort of sending counter messages, who are saying, you know what, you're perfectly fine the way you are, we love you, we care about you, we believe in you. When they've got safe spaces they can be in, like gay straight alliances, when they have opportunities to be part of the school community and be involved in sports and clubs and other groups in positive ways, these help offset that stigma. They help reduce the distress from being rejected or being a target of violence and help young people do well. And that's resilience, that opportunity to actually create resilient environments around young people that help them cope and do well.
When can we expect to hear more about this particular study and perhaps even read some of the results?
The stuff I've just been talking about in terms of the Gay Straight Alliances is a paper that's actually in press right now. And when it's published in the journal, it's the International Journal of Child, Youth, and Family Studies, we'll definitely be sending out a press release and announcing that. We will continue to have a variety of reports that are put up on our website, and the website for this particular project is the Stigma and Resilience Among Vulnerable Youth Center at UBC, and so the website is www.saravyc.ubc.ca. And we have a variety of our reports already up, and we will continue to issue releases as the research across the country rolls out and we have results.
Dr. Elizabeth Sawick, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
It's been my pleasure.
Elizabeth Sawick is a professor at the University of British Columbia School of Nursing. You can find her online at nursing.ubc.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.